This is a Beyond Casterbrus podcast. Available on iTunes, Audio Boom, Stitcher.com, Player FM, and BeyondCasterbrus.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the podcast with a K from BeyondCasterbrus.com. I'm Christian Corley, and with me are James McLean and Brian A. Terranova. That's his middle name. I'm not saying that he is A. Terranova, although he is A. Terranova. That's like his middle initial.
Chaps, wow, so true.
Yeah. Hey, how are we doing? All right?
Still? Great. Yeah. Doing great.
Yeah, yeah.
It's hard to find enthusiasm for that question after 7 years, isn't it?
After 7 years and Fear Her, which we just watched for a future for a future podcast commentary. Yes. Let's end this nonsensical pretense that we're doing this off the cuff. We're going to talk about some of the recent Doctor Who related news items, because although there isn't an awful lot to talk about with series, you know, the series has been recorded, you know, lots of lucky people go down to Cardiff and then they take photographs of themselves with Peter Capaldi, they have selfies with Peter Capaldi, and then they share them on Facebook and Twitter, and oh, I'm so pleased for all these people. I do wish perhaps occasionally that I aspire to have a life where I'm not tied to a desk or a family and can easily hop onto a motorway for 16 hours a day to get my photograph taken with Peter Capaldi before I'm snapped back to reality and then the nonsense of that situation. But all power to you people who do have your photos taken with Peter and Pearl Mackie as well. Well done to you. And well done to you for keeping the spoilers under wraps as well. We appreciate that.
I'm sure there's people out there trying to wonder if they've just been dissed or not here.
I don't know.
I'm not sure, to be honest. I genuinely can't tell. So,
but well done to you people.
Well done, I think.
So, yeah, news. Now, we've got a few items to go through, and, you know, not it's not headline news stuff, you know. If you want headline news, stick Hugh Edwards on. Just a few Doctor Who-related things. I think you're talking about people dissing people. So I think we should start with Stephen Moffat, don't you? And John Perriman.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that.
Yeah, the Torchwood thing. You know, there's been like a push for Torchwood to be brought back to TV over the past sort of like 2.5 years or so. We've heard various things of how it might be going or what plans they've got for it. There was apparently, we're told, a Torchwood without Captain Jack because of Barrowman's commitments in the United States, which would have involved another actor whose name we're not going to go into now because it would just completely ruin what we're about to talk to. It would kickstart a rumour that he's pretty much dead now. So we're not going to mention who that was. But yeah, there's been this push for it to come back. And recently, Barrowman has basically been complaining that it's not been as difficult as he hoped it would be. He was told that there are some obstacles to overcome. Every time he tried to talk about a way around them, it was almost like there was another obstacle, he says. He goes on that when it comes down that it's not being done because of people's egos, I find that really difficult. There's a lot of politics involved, and the people that are close to it, I think, would love to see it done, but there's just certain egos in the path that are just standing in the way. That's all I say. So it's surprisingly discreet, John Barrowman there. Pardon?
The reply wasn't, though.
Well, indeed, yeah. There's a lot of people.
I didn't see the reply.
You did. Oh well, we'll come to that in a moment.
Okay.
A lot of people at the time were speculating that he was perhaps talking about a certain microphone-headed showrunner of Doctor Who, and even the man himself has taken it that way. For a few days later, Stephen Moffat was asked. Was he asked about this, or he certainly responded to this anyway? Moffat released a statement, if I'm right in saying, via the Doctor Who News website. That's right. saying, you may be aware that John Barrowman has been saying publicly that I've been blocking a new series of Torchwood. To be very clear, I haven't blocked it. I wouldn't block it. I wouldn't even be able to block it. I didn't even know a revival had been mooted till I read about it on the internet. As John perfectly well knows, it's not my show, and I could no more prevent it happening than he could cancel Sherlock. I'm bewildered and a little cross even to be included in this conversation. For the record, I really like the show, brackets, especially the third series, and would be very happy to see more. Monsters and Mayhem, why not? But the fact is, it still has nothing, or it has nothing to do with me. Please pass it on to the anxious and angry. I've had enough hate mail now. So, where do you go from there?
I think he's right in the sense, obviously, that technically he has no control over Torchwood. I mean, as far as I'm aware, that is Davis's baby. At the same time, there could be certain influences that he could have, and he has had in his position, which might hinder things or might have hindered conversations in the past, certainly within internally. I don't know. I mean, it's a hard thing. I could imagine Barrowman making a statement quite glibly with, you know, assertions and assumptions, hence no one's named. Or it's a tough one, really. I mean, I could imagine Torchwood being blocked or being suggested that it's kept at bay for now, if simply just because the strategies of the Doctor Who production team, it might just not wanted to, it just wasn't in, you know, it was just something that they didn't need or didn't fit their mandate. And
right, I'm going to throw a couple of things in here, okay?
Okay.
One of them is, if we knew about a potential Torchwood revival that did not include John Barrowman a couple of years ago, then I'm pretty certain that it would have reached Stephen Moffat's office at BBC Wales. The other thing is that Doctor Who is run by several executive producers. So it doesn't have to have been Stephen Moffat, does it? It could have been Brian Minchin, it could have been anyone else involved at that high level of Doctor Who. So
absolutely, and to be fair, it's like you say, I mean, he doesn't actually name, but again, you sometimes wonder when someone isn't named and someone speaks out whether there has been a tussle behind the scenes, regardless of whether there is actually any truth to the actual accusation. You wonder if there has been a sort of dialogue which has meant that a certain person has felt that it was specifically aimed at them. Or maybe they just thought quite logically that it was probably him being named and everyone else did. So maybe he felt the need to sort of clarify for that. But yeah, it could have been that John wasn't talking about him, or it could have been that there had been words behind the scenes and John was sort of making assertions based on that, foundless or factual, who knows. But it is a difficult one. I think there's a lot of people in who do seem to be jumping on either side. I noticed that on Facebook. Yeah.
What do you think, Brian?
I think, knowing what we know of Moffat and his ego, I think outside of anybody else that we've ever seen connected with the show or Torchwood or anything else, there's only two egos, if I'm going to be fair to Moffat here, that I am aware of from both of the shows, and that's either Davis or Moffat, and Moffat being a much bigger ego. Which is very evident from any interview he's ever done or any way that he ever talks about the show or the fans. So having Barrowman address it the way that he did kind of made a statement, as far as I'm concerned, to the fans, which is pretty clear and obvious. And if it is somebody outside Moffat, I would be very surprised. And it sounds more to me like Moffat just doesn't want to deal with the mail and doesn't want the flack put on him in the same way he didn't want the flack for delaying Sherlock or Doctor Who because he was writing Sherlock or Doctor Who.
It does seem a very odd choice of Barrowman, because, I mean, as Moffat does in his reply, and he is totally right, that, you know, in a sense, it's nothing to do with him. So you think if there was something that... you think if Davis was holding things back, then why would Barrowman go after the Doctor Who team? It's a very odd strategy, unless there is a reason somewhere within the Doctor Who that Barrowman thinks, again, rightly or wrongly, but I have a suspicion he genuinely believes something's going on there which is hindering Torchwood, because it's so off-center that it feels odd for the accusation. But again, you know, still stressing, without knowing, you can't say. So you don't really want to sort of assume too much.
Yeah. I think it's unfortunate that Barrowman's been getting a bit of flack for this, even before Stephen Moffat issued his statement. Because, you know, I mean, I have a love-hate relationship with... it's completely one-sided, obviously, because we've never met with John Barrowman, because, you know, I love watching him in Torchwood and Doctor Who. And I absolutely want to kind of hide my head in down the toilet when he starts singing. And he's got a perfectly good singing voice, but he does have that very kind of cheesy showbiz persona to his, he's a multifaceted entertainer. It does seem to be getting some unnecessary criticism for this, I think.
Well, I think to be fair, in both cases, there is probably a bit of what people believe is what they're sort of going with. You know, if you find Barrowman irritating, then it sort of fuels the belief that Barrowman's being a git. And if you dislike Moffat for whatever reason, you're probably more likely to think, it's probably Moffat. So I think it's very little.
Well, when you think about the way things are, especially with the way celebrities are today and the way the world is today, with having access to basically every fan at a touch of a button, regardless of who the ego actually is, getting fans riled up enough to say, hey, you know, we want this series. We see Barrowman wants this series. Why are you guys stopping this series? It may make whoever that ego is sit there and go, well, crap, maybe there's some merit in this, or at least weight over their shoulders to say, this is something we should be making because people want it. So it seems more to me less of a frustration aspect on Barrowman's part and more of a maneuver to get the fans to show their voice. Because you have fans showing their voice saying we want Torchwood, and you can read that if you're looking for it on the internet. But once a celebrity like Barrowman starts a spark and then it turns into a flame with fans, well, you can't ignore that if you're somebody within the BBC who is putting this thing on hold for some reason. If you're an ego like Moffat, you're probably going to not give a crap and halt it anyway. If it's somebody else's ego and they're just an exec somewhere, somehow, maybe there's somebody above them that's just going to say, hey, look, bury the hatchet, make the show. And maybe that's what he's trying to do, is just trying to get someone to take notice that people want the show.
It's a very risky way of doing it, though. I mean, I know Moffat's on the way out.
Not the first, though. You know, when you think about it, other celebrities have used Twitter in similar ways to source frustration or to voice frustration over things they had to do or things they had to deal with. I think even Jennifer Lawrence has made comments about jobs that she's had to do, just kind of like let it out there, like, I don't want to take another job like this again.
Who?
Different circumstances, but, you know.
Okay.
I don't know. It's an option.
I don't know what you're talking about, but anyway, let's move on to... Yeah, that's puzzling me. But that's just something I've just seen. Let's move on to something else. Another person who's been accused of having an ego, but over the years, that's seemed to be not quite the case. Christopher Eccleston last week revealed his regret on leaving Doctor Who. He was speaking on the 774 ABC Melbourne Drive show, ostensibly about the A word, which seems to be... screening in Australia at the moment. Did you guys see the A word?
No.
Eccleston was really good in it as the grandfather of a child with autism. He was really, because he was completely, his character was like completely in denial that it was any sort of serious problem that could be cured, and at the same time he's recently widowed and he's having it off with a lady up in the nearby village. A very good show, well cast as well. But he says basically that I'll just read out what he said. Okay, there's always regret when you play a role like that, because what you do is you. I watched it back and I thought, okay, next time don't do this, do that. You know, calibrate the performance. It was kind of tragic for me that I didn't play him for longer. He's a beautiful character, and I have a great deal of professional pride. And had I done the second season, there would have been a marked improvement in my performance. I was learning new skills in terms of playing light comedy. I was not known for light comedy, and again, production did not allow for that. Now, we've previously heard that he's proud of his time on Doctor Who. Christopher Eccleston, he's done some fast... You know, he's a busy guy, he's a private guy, and yet the things he's done, you know, he's spoken to small children who've seen him in the street. He did a wedding proposal, didn't he, or something a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, this isn't a guy who's ashamed of Doctor Who or anything. So this is pretty much the most candid he's been about all of that, I think.
Yeah, I have to admit, I was kind of glad to hear him say that he wasn't known for light comedy, because I've always felt with Eccleston that a lot of his comedic moments felt forced in the show, almost like he didn't quite know how to play them. He got better with them. And he had a couple good ones in the beginning. I remember liking him, particularly dancing to Tainted Love in The End of the World. But yeah, you can see it. At least maybe he was uncomfortable with it, and that's what came off on the screen. But it's a shame. It's a shame. Much like Tom Baker had said that he had regretted not doing the 20th anniversary, 25th anniversary. And, thankfully he came back later on, but in my opinion, kind of a bit too late. And with Eccleston, it's even worse. It's way too late because of him not doing the 50th, we now have the War Doctor and this odd number counting system and a story that's different than the way it was supposed to be envisioned with Eccleston being in it. So it's a shame. It's nice to hear. It would be great to know that if there's another anniversary story out there, maybe he would say, hey, sure, I'll do it. But it's a bummer that people can't have these realizations when it actually mattered, as far as I'm concerned. And that may be harsh, but, you know, we've already seen the effects of him not doing it, and it's a shame.
Okay. Any reaction to that, James McLean?
No.
Okay, thanks. We'll move on. It's like... The Monty Python election special.
There's just some things you don't really have much to say about that hasn't already been said by Terranova.
That's absolutely fine. He has that effect on the podcast. Okay, so we know that the Power of the Daleks is set to be released online, and then after that on DVD in November.
Yeah.
Or is it October? I forget. 4th of October, 11:30. No, that's not it. No, it is November. It is November. Saturday, the 5th of November, online on the BBC Store, and on DVD on Monday, the 21st of November. The tickets to the BFI go on sale on the 4th of October, and they're £22.70, a maximum of 2 tickets per booker, because there is a BFI event which previews the first 3 episodes of the animated story, specially commissioned animated revival of The Power of the Daleks, which its first episode was originally broadcast on the 5th of November. So those details are coming along. Now, we had a brief chat about this, James and I, a couple of weeks ago, for a kind of a mini podcast. Brian, are you looking forward to this?
I am, actually. From what I saw, the little bit that I saw, that clip that was released however long before the announcement was made, I was very happy with the animation. I think some of the people animation I want to see a little bit more, but I like the animated episodes because it does give us something to watch of something that's missing, and it's not as good as the real video, no, but it's nice. And obviously, previously, we had only had animated parts, like episode 2 and 3, for example, of a story. But I'm looking forward to it because it's an episode I've heard before on audio. I enjoy the story, but I would like to be able to sit there and watch it. And I thought the Daleks were realized beautifully in the animation.
Yeah, the trailer that's been released is largely what was leaked. And the animation does look the best that they've achieved yet.
Mm.
In my opinion, there's a bit more detail to it. There's a bit more animation to the animation. There's more nuanced characterization. It looks good. James, have you massaged, revised your opinion on this since last time?
No, not really.
Okay.
I feel pretty much the same, sort of optimistic, but not over enthralled.
Yeah. We had a nice conversation about animation, didn't we? So,
yes.
That's still available for you to listen to.
Absolutely.
Dear listener. Okay, and there's something else coming along. on optical disc in the impending days that follow this. I don't actually have a bloody date for it. Why I haven't got a date for it, I don't know. But yeah. Oh yeah, very good, Philip Bates. Yeah, it's the Doctor Who TV movies coming out on Blu-ray, isn't it?
Oh right.
And which is a strange one because we're all going, oh, that means it's in HD. That means it's in HD. No, it's not. it's upscaled, which basically means that the very best possible picture is being produced from the existing video. Which isn't ideal. Now, this is out. This came out yesterday, actually, on September the 19th. So Monday just gone, as this podcast goes out, and it is upscaled. Apparently, the film does still exist. The original film does still exist, apparently, but the BBC aren't allowed access to it, probably without paying a premium that would probably scupper the entire project, presumably. So that's why they've gone for an upscaled version. So. I don't know how we feel about this. I mean, I do kind of want to get it, but, you know, if you went into a store, because my version of Spearhead from Space is on Blu-ray, but mine's a preview copy, so I don't have the box to go with it and don't have everything else to go with it. So if I went into a store and there's two .2s available on Blu-ray, and as much as I love Paul McGann and the TV movie, I would go for Spearhead from Space because it's genuine HD. And I do wonder whether this fact that it isn't genuine HD is going to, you know, is it going to put people off buying it?
It's going to put me off buying it, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
There's no merit to it as far as I'm concerned. My DVD plays just fine if it's going to be the same version,
exactly.
Slightly,
I mean,
upscaled.
You're not going to get a massively different picture from putting your DVD player on a modern DVD player or DVD/Blu-ray player through a full HD TV, are you? Which, because there's upscaling happening there, so you're not going to get a massive. This isn't worth the extra, you know, £20, £10, £20, whatever, for the level of picture that you're going to get. I don't believe.
I think this sounds like some people are very disappointed.
I think.
I can see why.
Yeah, if it's, you know, they could have released a improved version on DVD. The point of Blu-ray is to offer high definition. That's what it's there for. The capacity affords that. If high definition isn't available, then don't put it on Blu-ray.
The only other merit that I could see for Blu-ray myself is if they were going to take an entire season of classic Doctor Who and make a box set. Mm-hmm. Maybe it won't be high def, but it would take up a hell of a lot less space than the classic DVDs sold as individual stories, which I just don't think they should have ever done in DVD format. Shouldn't probably have even done it in VHS, but at the time it wasn't very common to sell things as box sets. But that's the only other thing that I can see. If you're not going to offer HD quality, then you should offer quantity.
Yeah.
That would be the best option for me.
I mean, the new release has got some lovely artwork by Lee Binding. It's got a bunch of extras, but, you know, they could just sit on a second. In fact, a lot of them do sit on a second disc because there's two discs in there. So it just seems like putting it on Blu-ray seems to me like a sales gesture and not something that's needed.
It makes you wonder why even do it. Like you said, just sales? Is that all they're looking to do? Just make some more money off of something? Like, what's the point? Are there going to be extras that come with it? Like, new extras? Are we going to get anything special? Is it going to be the same exact DVD release just in Blu-ray form? Like, what's the benefit?
There is some extras. You've got Night of the Doctor as a special feature. There's a couple of other
which is already on the Day of the Doctor.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah. What do you do? I don't know. Yeah. Let's spin this round. Let's spin this podcast round, guys, because it's not all doom and gloom and disillusionment with sales decisions. Tom Baker's in Star Wars.
Sort of.
Sort of. Well, he's in Star Wars Rebels. And we have a Star Wars Rebels expert in our midst, don't we, James?
Do we? Oh, yes. That thing. No. Yes. Yeah, that one. Yeah. Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah, so he's in there as the Bendu. This is what Don Baker told USA Today. The Bendu is described as a life force, which is something we haven't really seen before in Star Wars. He's not the dark side or the light. He's something greater. I'm flattered that Rebels executive producer Dave Filoni fancied me as a life force at the age of 82.
Ah, you heard my call. Good. Your imbalance woke me from a deep slumber.
Imbalance?
Your presence is like a violent storm in this quiet world.
You're a force wielder. But you're not a Jedi.
Wielder? Jedi and Sith wield the Ashlar and Bogan, the light and the dark. I'm the one in the middle, the Bendu. What do you call yourself?
I am Kanan Jarrus, Jedi Knight.
You carry conflict with you, Kanan Jarrus, Jedi Knight?
It's this.
Interesting.
Careful, it's dangerous.
How so?
It's a Sith holocron, a source of evil. My student's been using it, and I'm afraid it's changing him.
An object cannot make you good or evil. The temptation of power, forbidden knowledge, even the desire to do good can lead some down that path. But only you can change yourself.
So, yeah, interesting trailer there. Nice reference to Anakin Skywalker at the end as well. And his turning to the dark side. So, yeah, Tom Baker in Star Wars, that's quite a cool thing. But it's not the only thing the great man has been up to. Because he's teamed up again with Paul Mars. Paul Mars was behind The Hornet's Nest and the subsequent serial that Tom Baker did prior to teaming up with Big Finish. And have you guys seen the Baffelgab Productions thing he's done, this Baker's End?
No.
Okay. I have not.
Okay, well, it's Susan Jameson, who's the wife of James Bolam, I think I'm right in saying. And she was Mrs. Wibsey in the Hornet's Nest and the subsequent series, whose name escapes me still. And Katie Manning are appearing with Tom Baker in Paul Mars' Baker's End, in which Tom Baker plays Tom Baker. He's apparently came from discussions between Paul Mars and Tom Baker. It was Demon Quest and Serpent Crest. They were the subsequent audios after Hornet's Nest. Paul Mars says, I was in email conversation with Mr. Tom Baker. He sends hilarious emails. And we were coming up with some outrageous ideas for stories. All these funny little messages sent between us quickly bore fruit. And I ended up writing episode one of a rather macabre and comic series called Baker's End, in which Tom Baker plays Tom Baker and all kinds of hilarity and oddness ensues. The story unfolds across three CDs. The first part is The King of Cats, which is out now. Chaps, we need to listen to this trailer, okay?
Baker's End is nigh.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered to bid a cheery farewell to a departed legend.
I tell you, there's something murksome and swervish going on here.
He once told me, when his time came, he wouldn't go just like anyone else. He'd be going into space.
I am starting to think that this queue is full of doppelgangers.
What was the cause of his demise, as it were?
He fell from a very great height.
He fell?
Come down from there.
Mrs. Frimley!
It's the middle of the night!
I know!
And you've got nothing on!
Marvellous, isn't it? Very bracing!
I read the tarot. May I do you?
Go on, then.
Oh, that's very unusual. It's the large dancing cat.
I'm the extraordinary King of Cats.
I pounce on mice and mats and rats and flats and bats and cigarettes.
We must ensure that they do not.
There goes the neighborhood. Run for it, Susie, run!
Tom Baker is Tom Baker in Baker's End.
You should have handed over the vicar if you had been and left you alone.
I'm sorry, I can't make out a fudge-knocking word you're saying.
Right.
It's utterly balmy, isn't it?
It's something, all right.
Yeah. I'm going to I think I'm going to I might just buy that. I'm sorry, I can't understand the fudge knocking word you say. Tom Baker's still going strong at 82. Isn't that amazing?
He's no different, is he?
Oh, I'm laughing. This is the second or third time I've listened to it, and I'm still laughing at it. Oh dear.
I think personally, if it had been a TV show, I'd probably more apt to tune in. I don't know if they're finally getting around to doing a fully casted audio drama, but I really wasn't into the Paul Mars series because having like two people and the rest of it being narration, or the bulk of it being narration, was just difficult for me. I didn't enjoy that. After having all those years of Big Finish where you have a fully casted audio drama,
yeah,
it's difficult. So if this is fully casted, that's something different. But at the same time, it seems, especially like when she's talking like, what are you doing on the roof there in the rain kind of thing, it seems like the type of thing that I would much rather be seeing Tom Baker doing than listening
to
Tom
Baker
doing. You want to
see Tom Baker naked on a roof?
Yeah. I would. It would sell better as a TV show than an audio drama, because it's like, I don't know, comedy, unless it's stand up, generally works better for me in visual mediums. You know, like I don't know. No, I don't know. Maybe it's good. I don't know. I'm not. I can't say I'm enthused.
Okay. Well, yeah, I know what you're saying about the previous Paul Mars. The Doctor Who's, because Hornet's Nest was good, I think, because it had a good hook, but I'm not convinced that the hook of the Serpent's Crest was as good, and it certainly didn't draw me past the first episode. I think there was enough in the Hornet's Nest to keep you involved in the story, but to do that again, you know, it works as a conceit for one story, you know what I mean? But for that to continue through, you know, subsequent five or three part stories is very difficult. This, you know, this is a completely different spin, isn't it? Because it's Tom playing a version of Tom rather than Tom playing a version of Tom playing the Doctor.
Sure.
So, you know, there's something new with this, although partially the same cast as well. I'd be interested to see how well that does.
It's a good trailer.
It is a very good trailer, it is, yes, I agree. So that's from Baffle Gab Productions, who also they do the Scary Fires and the Hammer Chillers anthology and the Brendan Effie Mysteries, which is also, I think that's Paul Mars as well, and Vince Cosmos Glamrock Detective starring Julian Ryan Tutt, once touted as a Doctor Who star, but never cast. Who knows if he even auditioned? I don't. Okay, chaps. Have we anything to bring to this podcast with the K? Anything we've been watching recently? I'll tell you what, I'll start. Okay?
Go on.
We talked about this last time we got together. I do want to do an Earthshot commentary sometime. I watched Earthshot recently, and I find it's one of those ones that's very difficult to not enjoy, whatever mood you're in. But last night, I discovered... I started watching the first episode of The Mutants.
Oh, okay.
And promptly fell asleep.
Oh.
So it was late. So, you know, it's not a reflection on the quality of this oft-derided John Pertwee. Is it six part of The Mutants?
Five or six. Five, it's definitely a longer one, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a six. So
probably six.
Yeah, it's cause I think The Demons is the only five-parter, isn't it? And I may be wrong with that, but it's the only one I can think of. So, yeah, it's not my intention to unfairly malign the mutants, but I wasn't able to get past probably 15 minutes. Maybe not even that long. It was just past the moment where one of the Viking-esque guys was discovered to be mutating. That was about it. Next thing I knew, my alarm was going off. So, yeah. Not doesn't bode well, but I'm going to persist with it and see how many other more episodes I can fall asleep through. But I haven't seen the mutants before. That's the most important thing. I was browsing through, and there's a few. I mean, like, I've only seen. It occurred to me that I've only seen one of the Pelodons, and I can't remember which one it is, but I think it's the Sarah Jane one.
So, oh dear.
Yeah, so I haven't watched the original Pelodon.
Original one's better.
Yeah, I agree with these are ones that I've seen on UK Gold in piecemeal, you know. So I've never been, you know, there were evening screenings rather than Sunday morning omnibuses. So that's why I haven't seen these entire serials. So I do feel guilty about this as purporting to be a Doctor Who fan who hasn't watched every episode of Doctor Who. I've possibly broken
You're
some
off
sort
the podcast.
Of UN. Yeah, I'm going to say I've broken some sort of UN resolution, I think. And if not, I should have done. But yeah, I'm off the podcast. I'll have to go and do some coaxials with Gareth, won't I? If that's
maybe
okay,
one day we'll let you back in. I don't know. It's tough. It's a tough call.
Okay, are we going to round it up there? Has anyone got anything they want to say? Hey, watch this.
I haven't been watching anything.
I've just not had time. I've not watched anything since.
No, that's okay. I'll cut this bit out.
Good idea.
Yeah. So that's the mutants, and that brings us to the end of this week's podcast with a K, with myself, Christian Corley, with James McQueen and Brian a Terranova. Until next time, look out for some commentaries. Until then, goodbye.